So how do you see Mahabharat? What is it like? Story according to you. Well, let me. Mythological. So that's another dimension altogether.
Okay.
So we use the word mythological not in the sense that it did not happen. It is in the sense that we don't have sufficient documented history. That's all it means. This is a misconception. Mythologies are of two kinds, of course. One is where you don't have sufficient. There is some evidence. For instance, Siege of Troy is regarded as a myth. But later on, they found some evidence like the Cup of Menelaus, etc., etc. And evidence goes buried in deeper layers. And evidence is, our way of looking at it. What is the number one, since you spoke about mythology, evidence that Mahabharata did happen? Number one evidence. So since you have touched this subject, so what is the first evidence? First evidence is the first witness. Somebody who documents the story, who has witnessed it. So who is the author of Vedvyas? Vedvyas is the author of Mahabharata. He is also in the story and he has witnessed the story. He comes at least on two occasions. Two occasions very openly. So if you go strictly by history, it should be accepted as a prima facie evidence. Because the writer, unless we discredit, there was nobody like Vedvyas, but that's impossible to discredit because Vedvyas' name comes several places in different documents in Indian storyline. So this is history because the man who saw it, witnessed it, was part of it, is writing about it. Details we may, obviously over a period of time, details get added, lost. Many things are added of a different symbolic nature. That's a difference. So it's not really myth in that sense that Mahabharata war never happened. Yeah. So very interestingly, since we are talking of Mahabharata, the same applies in Ramayana. Valmiki is both at the beginning of Ramayana, at the end of Ramayana. And Valmiki is the author of Ramayana. So if you go by first hand evidence, there is. Second evidence is that Mahabharata has been spoken about subsequently. Even examples have been given. Like in Mahabharata, you have this mention of Rama, mention of, the great war that took place. So this is a subsequent evidence that people who have come have spoken about it. And the third is whether there are any physical evidence of those days. So they are there, but they are, of course, there are sites, there are spots which mark, but not that, like you won't find those weapons of mass destruction that existed, but certainly Kurukshetra, many other spots, same with Ramayana and Mahabharata. So what about Shri Krishna? Is he myth or real? Real. Good. That of course is there, but I'm just saying that Shri Krishna of the historical fame. Yeah. Avatar. People say that he is myth, some people. For us he is real or real than real. Does it make sense? Real than real? What is real? Real is what is palpable to the senses. Is everything that is felt by these senses, is that the only measure of reality? Are there things which we cannot experience by these material senses, yet it is real? For example, yeah, no, but I have something in everyday life. Of course, but something very, very, yeah. Air we breathe, of course, still you can indirectly. What about love?
Feelings.
It may not show up. You may not be able to measure the serotonin levels or the, but still it's real. Yeah. So there are so many things which are real to the subjective awareness of man, but not real to the objective. Now, as we grow inwardly, this subjective thing, which is at first very hazy, thoughts, feelings, they begin to become more and more real. So when we use the word more real than real, that's what it implies. Now this is one part. Now we come straight to Mahabharata. Krishna is mentioned in the Chandogya Upanishad, son of Devaki. Krishna is spoken about subsequently again. Okay, so there is that reality of Krishna, even historical Krishna. So now we come to what does Mahabharata is about. So any story, even our life story, it runs on three streams. One is the outer. If somebody describes anybody's life story, so they may, you know, how will they describe? Born here, graduated, married, has children, had children. You know, that's the usual story. Achieved this, became this, that. Is something important missing? A whole inner world. What one went through in life, the struggles, the anguish, the hopes, the challenges, they are not documented. What is documented is the outer story. Right? So there is an inner story which runs, which is very important, because that's what makes a person. A man who achieves success, but inwardly he is a man who has somehow managed to cheat or whatever. And the other person who meets with failure, but has lived a very high inner life. So which of them from the inner standpoint will be more perfect? Whom would you really regard as second one, isn't it? So from that yardstick, is Ramayana success story or a failure story? See, we have to look at it from that perspective, that there are people who are inner successes, but their outer story is a failed story. Of course, Ramayana is a success story, but I'm just saying the way it ends, some people try to. Even about Mahabharata, people try to, you know, say that, look here, there was a clash, so many died. That's an outer story. So what survived this entire Holocaust that took place? Nowadays also people speak about this may happen, Third World War. Many people may die, or now Russia and America are again back to the Cold War era, but with much more severity. So there is something which survives through all this. The anguish, the defeat, the struggle, the victory, the challenges. That's what outer history documents. And the challenges that they go through. But what survives at the end is the inmost core of a story. So when we speak about Ramayana, for example, we don't say it's a, oh, what was the point? Lord Rama has to go away and Sita had to be abandoned. That's not how we describe Ramayana. We instinctively feel it's a story of the victory of Rama over Ravana. This is the minimum. There are many other things in Ramayana. Similarly, when we talk about Mahabharata, there is a very interesting thing which Sanjay recounts when Dhritarashtra asks him, what is your take on what's going to happen? Because he is the one who has narrated the Gita. He says, I don't know, but two things I can say for sure. That long after, you know, it sounds just like what Chittaranjan Das spoke of Sri Aurobindo. In very similar words. Like he said, long after this controversy is hushed and, you know, across the seven seas, his name will echo and re-echo. The man who stands here in the courtroom of history. So something very similar, Sanjay tells Dhritarashtra. He says, I don't know, one thing I know for sure, that long after this war is gone, people will doubt whether these soldiers existed, whether men of this caliber, like Arjun, Bhim, whether they were real, they were not real, whether they were myths or legends. Two things will definitely survive. Then he says, one is that which I have heard on the battlefield, the Gita. And the second is, he says, the great vision of the divine time spirit, Vishwarupa of Sri Krishna. He says, these things will survive and become the drivers of mankind across the coming age. Great. Have you wondered that, you know, nowadays we say that there is so much of information technology, and thanks to the internet, we can spread information like that. And people sometimes cite, look, Because of internet, we can talk about now Mahabharata, Ramayana and all these things. But have you wondered how these things survived down the ages? Nobody recorded Ramayana. There was no publishing house. Purely oral tradition. You know, there was a time when history was oral. That's why many of things are not written, which many Western scholars are unable to understand, that in India, history was transmitted through an oral tradition. But that's a different subject altogether. And yet, whether you doubt somebody put the Gita in Mahabharata or whatever, that's not important. The fact is that the Gita not only survived 4,500 years down the line, but it has continued to inspire and continues to inspire mankind across the globe. Isn't it a marvel? So sometimes when people say that, well, Krishna is a myth, so I tell them, what a myth, that the Gita continues to inspire mankind. Sri Krishna continues to inspire art forms, dance forms, music, poetry, so many generations of poetry, painting, Warcraft, you name it, and it goes back to Krishna. Yeah, many art painting forms, art forms, dance forms, music. I said, look here. Bhakti. Bhakti, yes, bhakti. The Gita, the bhakti, which has been a gift of Sri Krishna to earth. So it's something amazing when we read through the Mahabharata. We can discover that there are three lines on which a story runs. It has the first immediate relevance to us. The outer is going with all kinds of strife, quarrel, things happening, victory, losses, success, failures. So many times the Pandavas fail, we'll come to that. And then the inner uthal-puthal, turmoil. But what survives at the end is the core. The divine core, the divine seed in us. And that is Krishna. Just as Krishna is the core, the seed, around which ultimately the Mahabharata story runs, without really mentioning. If you read the Mahabharata, it starts from somewhere, long story from the clan. Ultimately it traces back to Rama's clan, which goes back to, you know, Ikshvaku, and from there then, you know, the Suryavanshis go into Chandravanshis and Yadukul, and the Suryavanshi line continues. It starts like that. But Mahabharata runs, ultimately the center of Mahabharata is the unseen someone who was quietly growing in Vrindavan. It's not there in the Mahabharata. I'm sure you all know. Don't go by the serial. The story of Sri Krishna growing up, his exploits, are in the Bhagavatam. Vyas doesn't talk about him. He's introduced somewhere in the middle. But when he's introduced, he takes over the entire story. Everything changes. All calculation go for a six. Becomes the center of the story. He always was the center of the story, as he reveals in the... So similarly in our life, you know, Vyas enters him, Vyas mentions him only with one word. Vyas doesn't say he is God, he is wonderful. He doesn't use those terms. He uses only one term for Sri Krishna, and that is aparimeh. Aparimeh, measureless. He says nobody can measure him. So we also have the story of Sri Krishna, you know, is a reminder of our own life. There is in us something like a divine seed born in the prison of the ego, cancer. But this seed is destined to conquer over it. Regardless, it is an imperishable seed. So Kans tries to destroy, because he knows it's his nemesis. He tries in various ways, various kinds of difficulties, and there is story in Saul. I love the Bhagavata, one of the most profound scriptures. And at the end, there is the conquest of Krishna over Kansa. So too in our life, there is that imperishable seed, Krishna's seed. That's how Krishna says in the Gita. How does he address to humanity? He says, Mamaiv Ansha. That's from where Vansha comes. That it's my seed that all humanity is. And at another place he speaks of creation as Etada Yonihi. I am the eternal womb of all things. That which is in the background. So in us too, there is this eternal imperishable seed, the mother uses the word psychic being, which remains in the background. Outside turmoil is happening, this happening, that is happening. The moment this comes and takes over, the whole landscape changes.
This is psychic.
Psychic being. The whole values are reversed. And so one of the greatest lessons of the Mahabharata is to discover and align with this seed. This is what Arjun did. So often you see when there is a comparison, people compare Karna and Arjun. I say there is no comparison because they are two different levels. Karna is expert in his field. Okay, fine. So is Bhishma, so is Drona, so are many other Ashwatthama for that matter. But Arjun has, he is also an expert, but he has that extra something. And that extra something is that he is, the Nar in him has surrendered to the Narayana. That is the deadly combination. That's why it is said in the Gita at the end, wherever there is Sri Krishna and wherever there is Arjuna, there is victory. So Nar is the Arjun, and Sri Krishna also says, like Nar and Narayan, we have fought the battle. So the secret of human life is there. And what is true victory? True victory is never a personal thing that I won over this person, I had a court case and see, things went in my favor. That's not victory. They are the events which come and go. True victory is the victory of Krishna in us. So Arjun knows it. So again, there is a famous aphorism of Sri Aurobindo, that how that little story reminds us. He says, on one side, if there is the entire world on one side, and on the other side there is Krishna, unarmed, choose Krishna. See, this is one choice which changed everything. Duryodhana had a choice. He chooses the army. Army is also Krishna's, that's the beauty. But to choose Krishna rather than anything else, Krishna unarmed. And when Shakuni comes to know that Arjun has chosen Krishna and Duryodhana has chosen the army, Duryodhana thinks that I am very wise, smart. He says, see, that idiot, emotional fellow. And Shakuni says, you are a fool. You don't know what he has chosen. He has chosen victory. So it shows us the significance of choices. He knew. He knew ki as long as there is Krishna, and that's why in the end he even tries. Sri Krishna actually entices him in the end day to play a game of dice with him. So he says, that comes at the end of Mahabharata.
So that happened, the dice?
No, he can't. Where Krishna is there. He knows. He says, what do you put at stake? He says, if I lose all of them, I agree. Now only one day, only Duryodhana is missing. He knows. He says, with you I cannot win. So that's how, because he wanted it to, you know, at least maybe the prince will survive even then. So this one side of the story. There are several other very fascinating sides in that whole story. Krishna is life, Krishna is the core that one must choose. Then there are many things which are happening inside the war, which is very interesting. One is that Bhishma has mastered all the outer conditions of death. He will die when he chooses. So it looks like this is the best case scenario. But he reaches a point where he is compelled to choose his own fall. He's compelled, whatever be the outer circumstances and Shikhandi and all that is fine. But he's compelled to eventually make a choice where he falls, given the background. So in mankind tries always to conquer death by outer means. Isn't it? By this disease, this method, that method. But as long as he doesn't discover the inner root, the inner truth of one's own immortality, any outer condition you may master, still you will be compelled and you will leave the body at its appointed time and hour. Mother says that is fixed. There are very few people who can rise above it and say no. Of course, yogis are those on the path of sadhana are a different breed altogether. So this is another aspect of the story of Krishna. Then there is another fascinating tale in the Mahabharata. After the war is over, so two very interesting stories. So stories are that, you know, war is over and everybody has died, they have been given Agni, and then at the end all these souls of the departed, they come out and the opponents, they embrace each other and they ascend. So what is this? Now this is very interesting. So in everyone, even the most apparent evil and wicked person, there is a seed of goodness which is hiding. And the divine extracts that. He is like the, not only the alchemist, but one who extracts. So the story goes that when Yudhishthir goes to heaven, two little stories intertwined within that. So one is, he is told that, you know, you can choose, because you spoke an apparent lie, or few moments in hell, or rest is all your heaven. So what do you choose? He says, take me to hell first. He sees there all his kith and kin and people who are suffering. It's a scene which is created. It's not true. So when Yudhishthir is there and the person says, your moment is over, it's enough, come to heaven. But all of them say with hungry hand that please stay here. Your very presence is giving us, it's soothing us. So he says, if that is the case, I do not want to move from here. And then it is told this was a test for you. Now in this story, two things come. One is the greatest renunciation is not just of earthly goods, but also of heavenly goods. The heavenly prize, if you can renounce. It also shows that a person, because people often ask spiritual people, what good are they to the world? I am talking of those who are not actively engaged in, you know, doing outwardly, doctors and military people or engineers, other whatever professionals. The very presence of a person who is living goodness and breathing goodness creates a zone in which automatically people, when they breathe that atmosphere, they feel relieved. His presence is a relief. He doesn't have, so all of us can integrate that in our everyday life. The presence of a person who is breathing goodness. Yudhishthir is not a spiritual man, but he's a good human being. And that goodness radiates. It's like percolates. So it goes into the atmosphere. So we all have our own atmosphere. And that atmosphere is, we may not understand it because we are in it, but there are those who feel it. And that's something very beautiful about the story. So the scene changes and Yudhishthir goes to heaven. There is Duryodhana is also there. He says, what is this? So he says, well, everybody had something good about them. That part deserves a place here. He says, what is good about Duryodhana? He says, well, he was a veer. See, he was, whatever it is, the fellow was headstrong even during fighting. He chooses Bhim. He could have chosen Arjun. So he was a veer. So you have to give him that credit. He was also a generous man. So everybody had something good which survives all the outward coating of good and bad in which we morally judge people. That good is not about moral things. Because Duryodhan didn't do moral things with his veerta. But still he is a veer. And if he is a veer who takes the challenge of life, even though for the wrong cause and the wrong purpose, still there is that little thing inside. The story, interestingly, of Mahabharata is very, I'm just randomly, because now Mahabharata is too vast, is about, very interesting, about how the mafia don started. You have heard about Godfather? Anybody has read?
Yes.
Godfather is, of course, very famous. So how do these... In Hindi, they made a mess of it. Dharmatma. So, anyways, so what do Godfathers do? And this is a very big story too. It's a lesson. So how do these mafia dons, you know, really operate? They will know somebody who is needy. Even terrorists are created like that. So they will know somebody is needy, in a distress, and is looking for help. So they will immediately give help. Oh, beti ka shaadi karna, okay. I'll give you money.
Same politicians also.
Same, absolute. So what do you think I was referring to mafia dons? Okay. Why? So now what happens? Immediately he'll not say anything. He'll say, what shall I do? He says, no, don't worry, you just enjoy. Then he gives it again. After 2-3 times, this was the movie D Company was based on this. Then one day he says, take the gun, kill him. So Duryodhan is the prototype. See, everything is there of the first mafia don. He suddenly tells Karna, he knows this fellow is extremely ambitious. He wants to rise high and prove a point, and you know, he is the one whom society has sort of always created some kind of conflict. So he says, I give you the kingdom. You are now a king in your own right, Angraj. He knows that I have got a warrior equal to Arjun in my camp. He does same thing even with Shalya. So Shalya's story is also interesting. You know who was Shalya? Shalya was the mama, maternal uncle of Nakul and Sahadev. Okay, so Shalya. So Shalya, when he comes, they give very nice treatment all through. Yudhishthir took it for granted. Don't take anybody for granted. Whether husband, wife or relations. They took him for granted. Are, he is our maternal uncle. He will be with us. Big mistake. And Duryodhan is taking care of everything for him. So when he comes, he says, it is so nice. I will give my life for these people. Now he doesn't know who are these people. Then Duryodhan comes. He says, what are you doing here? He says, how did you like my arrangement? He says, your arrangement. See, Krishna was smart in his diplomacy. So when he goes to this place, Hastinapur, and Duryodhan offers him that you stay with us. He says, no, I'll go to stay with Vidursa, in Vidursa house. It's immortalized in one of Surdas' poems. Duryodhan ke meva tyage sag vidurka. He knew ki this fellow is trying to hook me, but he obviously can't. But Shalya got hooked. Karna got hooked. So Shalya says, now I have promised, and really it was amazing. And then he's annoyed that these my nephews, they did nothing. Nephews took him for granted. But then he is caught in that conflict. So he knows that basically my nephew is right. They're fighting for the right cause. So what he says, I'll drive the chariot of Karna. Karna is very happy. So what does he do? He plays the role of what is known as the fifth columnist. It's a very good psychological thing to remember. You know who are the fifth columnists in battle? Shubhendu used this term in Savitri. They are the ones who are coming from behind. They are the fifth. You have the direct fighting arm, then artillery, all this. Then they are the ones who are carrying all this. They have a role to play. So they are chatting amongst them and they start, you know, they can encourage the troops in front. Sir, chalo, hum tumhare saath hain, etc., etc. Or they can say, oh my God, the army is looking so terrible. Probably, you know, I don't know whether we can. So they can instill doubt. Shalya plays the role of a fifth columnist who instills doubt. He keeps telling Karna, are you sure you want to take this battle? Are you sure? You don't know what Arjun is. So at some point he says, what is it? Whose side are you? He says, no, of course I am driving your chariot. So in all of us, there is a fifth columnist which fills us with doubt. If you allow doubt to drive you, you will lose a winning battle. And if you allow Krishna to drive you, see that it's not only Karna versus Arjun, but also the driver. Who is the driver? So be sure who is driving us. Is doubt driving me? Some people are driven by doubt and fear. So anything they have to decide, they say, should I not? And they keep shrinking. There are others who have trust in the divine and they take the decision. So see this story, how beautifully it is intertwined. And then, after the war, another story you may have heard about Khatu Shyamji. Shri Krishna beheads him. He was capable of destroying the entire, any army actually, frankly, with two arrows. Yeah. There are two stories about him. One is that he is coming, and this one I'll tell. This is very interesting because it applies today. Sometimes we say, we like to play the devil's advocate, or you know what is that term called, that the underdog. There are some people who will fight for the underdog regardless of whether he is right or wrong. So you know, this fellow is very, very wonderful, and he is coming on the way, and Shri Krishna would say, where are you going? He says, I hear there is a war which is going on. So he says that, which side are you planning to fight? He says, whichever is the weaker side. So Krishna says, who is the weaker side? He says, with you on this side, is it any doubt which is the weaker side? He's a smart fellow, because he regards Krishna as, you know, the ultimate. He says, I know you are on the side of Pandav, so I have to fight on the Kauravas because they're the weaker side. So Krishna's Kauravata. This fellow knows. So Krishna tells him, okay, so you really regard me as this? He says, yes, you are the ultimate and I worship you. So what about some Guru Dakshina? That's when he asks for his head. You know, so he gives the Guru Dakshina. And Shri Krishna says that you will be immortalized now and you will be known by my name. So he becomes immortal. He would have anyways been killed, because with Krishna on this side, Yeah, so he was saved, even Karna, all these people were saved by Shri Krishna. We'll come to that, the controversial aspects, because he would have died a death of ignominy because he was such a mighty warrior, and yet he knows he wants to fight from the underdog simply because that's how his ego operates. But he knows that with Krishna on this side, nobody can win. So he would have been neutralized, but gone down with this idea that such a mighty warrior died ultimately, because Shri Krishna would have found a way. Now he is killed, but now as an offering. So then he says, you are immortal, so your head will be, he places the head on a tilai, on a, you know. See, these are myths which here it carries a symbol, not as a physical reality, but as, he says, you will observe the whole Mahabharata because you are now immortal. You will see impartially. So after the whole Mahabharata is over, now the warriors which survive, they're all, we won the victory, especially Pandav, you know, just about 18 survived actually. Out of them, three were had, you know, Ashwathama, Kritvarma and Kripacharya, go into a different category. So, Satki has survived, and
what
all.
Yutsu
survives. So, that's another interesting story. So, they are, the 18 who have survived, they are each a claimant. So ultimately there is a tug of war between Bhima and Arjun. They are the two greatest warriors. Then they say, why don't we ask, Barbarik, now Khatu Shyamji. He says, he will know. So Sri Krishna takes them along and the head laughs. He says, why? He says, well, you people are asking who is the greatest of them all. I saw Krishna on this side, I saw Krishna on that side. I saw only one warrior, that is Krishna. So how is Krishna on one side, on the other side, on both the sides? It's a very beautiful story of the mystery of the divine manifestation. So the divine is in everyone and everything. Now the logical conclusion of this will be, our mind will say, therefore we should not fight anyone. But in the manifestation, the divine has manifested in one way in the past. Now when he moves toward the future, the past has to go. Therefore, though the divine is in Kauravas, that's a past way of life, an outdated way of life. The Dharmasya Glani, they were all great people, but they had all were using dharma for their own selfish ends. That's what is Dharmasya Glani. So therefore that past has to go. And what must survive and go on is the new consciousness. Dharma manifesting in a new way. They are also saying with dharma. Bhishma says, I am dharma. Selfish motives. He is somebody holding on to his pratigya. That's another story where Sri Krishna teaches a lesson to Bhishma. So Sri Krishna has also taken a pratigya. Not pratigya, he says basically I won't lift arms. Isn't it? I don't want to fight from anybody's side. But I am with Krishna and obviously with Pandavas. I'll give counsel. So on I think 9th day or something, or one of the days, all the Kauravas chide Bhishma, with you around, we have not been able to kill even one Pandav. You are being partial. And you are being, you know, you are all this, your drama you are doing. So they push him so much that he gets very aroused. He says, tomorrow we'll see at least the end of one Pandav, if not all of them. Now when Bhishma is that, then you can imagine, you know, who is going to stand? He was a very mighty warrior. He was playing softball, that is true. He had said, 5,000 soldiers I'll kill, but I won't touch the Pandavs. That's how he was going. And Karna will not come on this side. So he was actually trying to balance out. That day he's so aroused. He says, so nobody can face him. Arjun goes to face him. But the way he fights, Arjun knows that today, even it may be mighty day, he fights valiantly, but Arjun's bow, arrow, his crown, his flag, chariot, everything. Now Arjun is without an armor, face to face with Bhishma. Just then, when Bhishma is about to shoot a deadly arrow, Sri Krishna stands between the two and picks up the wheel and takes it on his hand like a Sudarshan Chakra. Bhishma fires the deadliest arrow, but the arrow stops. Then he doesn't know what has happened. So he remembers he had promised that he'll not lift an arm. So he says that, well, you were not supposed to lift the arm, you had promised. So Sri Krishna says, all other promises are secondary. There is one promise I have made eternally to every soul, that they who depend on me, I'll never abandon them. It's immortalized in two lines, one of my favorite lines from one of the bhajans. I'll say this in Hindi and then translate in English. I don't know whether you have heard this, Pradeep bhai, or not. Prabal prem ke pale padkar prabhu ko niyam badalte dekha. Apna maan rahe na rahe, par bhakt ka maan na talte dekha. He does it several times. In time of Jayadrath, he tweaks nature. And people say this. Krishna says, I don't care. You call me non-righteous, it's okay. Bhuri Shava tells him all kinds of things on the battlefield. He doesn't care. He is so focused on the dharma which he has embodied to manifest. All other things are secondary at this point of time. It's a clash of civilizations. You people have used dharma for personal ends. That's what you people are doing. So now the dharma must manifest. And this story is so interesting, that how the Pandavas represent the new. Look at the story of their birth. I'm not going into the technicalities of the story, whether it's possible or not possible. It's very much possible, but that apart. Look at the five Pandavas plus Karna. None of them has come through what would normally be described as the normal process. There was a term for this, Ayoni Sambhava. There may have been a normal process, we don't know, but definitely they are anshas of devatas. And after everything is over, Pandavas are going to go away. Who rules the land? Parikshit. Parikshit is again died in the womb of Uttara because of the Brahmastra of Ashwatthama. Sri Krishna brings him to life again a new birth. So you see, whenever we have times of transition, it applies today also. There is the old consciousness which is maybe very high, but in the transition time, everything goes. It's not like Bhishma will be spared, Dronacharya will be spared, everything will go, both sides. Drishtadyumna dies, all of them die. Draupadi's five sons die. Because that's a time when the high and the low both are brought to ground. So that's why many parents don't understand. They say there were many good things in our times. At least they should have survived. No, because something very new is going to emerge. And that's the story of a new creation in those days that he reveals.
You're saying almost the same thing.
Yes. Sri Aurobindo spoke about it. He uses the word Kalivraja. He says the Pandits speak of Kalivraja as if only the bad things will go. He says no, even the good things will go. It's an entire cleansing. Because something very new, a new orientation of life, which will be may look very challenging right now because it doesn't fall into any of the yardsticks of the old. But it is going to ultimately move towards something unprecedented, totally new. Prabal Prem Ke Pa. Mujhe rona aa raha tha, isliye main ruk gaya tha. Now I can say in a more saner way. Prabal Prem Ke Paale Padkar Prabhu Ko Niyam Badalte Dekha. Prabal Prem Ke Paale Padkar Prabhu Ko Niyam Badalte Dekha. Apna Maan Rahe Na Rahe Par Bhakt Ka Maan Na Talte Dekha. Arjuna has promised. And Shri Krishna says, why do you make such promises? I'll kill Jayadrath. Why did you make this? Did you ask me? No. Okay, anyways. He fulfills his promise.
He said,
and so same thing toward the end. See, everywhere people have blamed Krishna. From the human yardsticks, yes. Whether it be the death of Jayadrath, there is a very interesting.
This lying part of Krishna.
Huh.
How many places he has lied?
I'll tell you. Lying, no. His game. He has not lied even once. That I'll tell you. Krishna has never lied. Okay, I'll come to that. But he has tricked. So first is, see, now comes the real politic. To know the real politic of that time, you have to go into the landscape of the Mahabharata. So there are three kingdoms. One is Magad, other is Hastinapur, and the third are the Yadavas. They are the most powerful kingdoms. And Sri Krishna wants now one nation. He gave birth to the nation soul. The other day somebody wrote to me, sir, you are saying nation soul, but concept of nation soul is only 300 years back or 100 years back. I said, yes, concept in the Western world. We had a nation formed in Krishna's time. And then I gave evidence. I said, Rama actually established Aryavart and out of Jambudvip, he actually gave birth to a nation and Sri Krishna stabilized this. He established the kingdom as a nation. So they are the three mighty kingdoms. Now with three mighty kingdoms, you cannot have a nation. You have to have one, neither will concede. Now you see Sri Krishna's trick, trickster, okay. Now but divine diplomacy. Most dangerous of them is the Magadhans. Magadhans will not agree. They have formed alliance with Shishupal and Kansa. They were in alliance. See, nowadays people talk about alliance. Just wait. The eternal trickster is at play. So these three were in alliance. Very powerful. And also Rukmi. So how he goes into real politics. So Jarasandh he neutralizes. And Jarasandh and Shishupali neutralizes. And both these kingdoms actually joined the Pandavas in the real battle. Very interesting. Chedi Desh and Magad, they were with the Pandavas. But with Jarasandh and Shishupal alive, it wouldn't have been possible. So he plays some real politics. Kansa he neutralizes. Rukmani he marries. So he has already cleared a ground. Subhadra, his own sister, so that now Balaram can stay quiet. So all this he has laid a ground. Yadavas, he very conveniently says, army goes this side, so nobody can tell him of fair or unfair dealing. The chieftains can make a choice. Satyaki says, I'll be on the Pandavas, and Kritvarma goes on that side, and they have their own alliances. But the army is sent on that side. At the end, even the Yadukul goes. It's drowned. That's another very fascinating story. So he forms a kingdom through all this. So he doesn't lie. During the Jarasandha time, he has got an impossible boon. It starts from there. His tricks. So he has got a boon that, you know, because he was born like that, the story is a bit long. But Bhima is fighting and tearing him apart. It joins again. What do you do against such a person? So he reminds him, tear him apart, throw like this, put a shivling in between with mud. Because, yes, so that's how he does. It's a trick. He plays the same trick with when Kaliyavan comes. He's an invader. So what does he do? He doesn't fight the war. He says, why should all these army die? He becomes Ranachod. He runs away. Heard his name, no? Ranachod. So he runs away. Hey, Krishna, you are running. Kaliyavan, see my might. He has background story in his mind. He goes and hides in a cave where a very old king, he is in a deep sleep because he has fought the Devasur Sangram and he has got a boon from Indra. Whoever wakes you up will die. So he goes and hides in the cave. Kaliyavan comes, stumbles over him. Mushkund wakes up and by his energy he dies. Kaliyavan is neutralized. Trick, yes. He is not supposed to run away from the battle. He never does. Then in where else? In the famous where he asks Yudhishthir, he doesn't tell a lie. He tells Yudhishthir, see, either you have to bear with Dronacharya, with Bhishma. He is not going to die. Or else, you have to kind of be with Dronacharya, sorry. Or you have to somehow dishearten him. So he says, but how we can dishearten him? He says, well, one way is that you can tell him some news, and that's how he proceeds. So he says, but who can kill Ashwathama? Ashwathama is immortal. And he says, you don't have to, thank you, you don't have to really tell, kill real Ashwathama. Kill an elephant. And tell the whole truth. He says, you tell, it's an elephant. You are comfortable. He says, yes. Krishna has his plans ready. Bhima kills. Then Yudhishthira announces, because he is not believing that Ashwathama, everybody is saying Ashwathama has died. So Drona says, Yudhishthir, if you confirm, I'll believe it. Because I don't believe it. So Yudhishthir says, yes, Ashwathama has died. But, and he has to say, not your son, but elephant. But the moment he says Ashwathama has died, Sri Krishna, all the din and noise start all around. The war drums and everything. And he sits because he does not hear. So technically, so there is something called as technical right which is being used, technical truth. Sometimes you see, no, even in courts, you win a case over a technical truth. So he uses a technical truth, actually not a lie, technical truth, for the larger truth to win. But it comes across as a lie because he doesn't understand. So if you see, trick, yes. The same thing he does with Karna. Karna's death is a special grace. Karna has to go because now the larger picture is very clear before Krishna. It is dharma. But he prefers to give the Karna a noble death. So what is the noble death? Both of them are equal match when it comes to only the arrows. So situations are created. He takes the chariot away and, you know, then he takes it far into a ground which is very marshy. And obviously it goes inside and Karna tries to pull, and then he says, you kill him. So that all through we can have a good word about Karna, that you know, maybe if he would have fought, he may have won. Like people say, it's Krishna's generosity. He would have been killed any which way. So, at least, you know, but at the same time, he was still, that's what I'm saying, we will come to that, wrong or right. But also, he was trying to put Brahmastra, but he forgot. Now, that was the curse. Now, what should the other warrior do? Wait for him to remember the Brahmastra? Or it's a battle, it's a war. The rules were broken on the day Abhimanyu died. Now, lastly comes, in India, there is a called as dharma of everything. There is a dharma of politics. You have been to use that word. And there is a dharma of war. Let's say that there is a real war situation today. Must have seen that movie Border. Okay. So one of them comes out and plays Mako, and I am going to, you know, are you supposed to do that? It's a dharma of war. You don't do that. It's foolishness. Karna had an option. Just surrender. I don't want to fight this war. That was the dharma of the Kshatriya, to give Abhedan. It's a war situation. Dronacharya has no right to grieve and sit on the battlefield and start meditating and lamenting. Of course, trickster is at play, no doubt about it. But if you go at the dharma of war, in the middle of a war, you have to be conscious, because enemies will play strategies. Strategies are part of combat, and Krishna plays divine strategies because he is the divine. And of course, at another level, right and wrong are important when it comes to the individual choices which concern us. But when it comes to the larger fate of a civilization, then you can't keep your hands clean and say, well, you know, I saw the terrorist enter, but I kept quiet, you know, because they told me, don't talk about us to anyone. And I promised in front of them, I will not share the information. Should one remain quiet or no? He should say, because there is a larger, what is at stake? So this is how we have to look at it. All Krishna's stories are all about...
What he did with Duryodhan?
Same thing. So Duryodhan goes to Gandhari, tells him, because he knows now, desperate, says, you come, I'll do something. So she has all her life done tapasya. So she opens her eyes and looks at Duryodhan, and there is so much tej that her whole his whole body becomes like a vajra. Except he, that too, Shri Krishna tells him, you are going naked in front of your mom, don't do that. At least wear something. So he so this part remains weak.
This is the first time he said something sensible to me.
Yes, he says. And so he doesn't realize that that becomes his actually spot, a weak spot. Now Krishna knows it. Now what should he do? Yes, Gandhari has taken now part in the war, giving a very unfair kind of advantage. So either Bhim plays by the rule. Now what are these rules if you really look at it? Rules are man-made. They are made by society. Gada Yuddha mein you won't do this, you don't want to do this. Made. There are no absolute truths about it. Like Rama killing Bali. Should he play just by the rules? Or make sure that a brute beast is out of the game? Bali was too dangerous. He was forming alliances with the Asuras all the time, rather than the humans. So that part, you know, he... And so when he has to fight, he knows there is no way Bhim can do it. But there also he allows, just like Rama allows Sugriv to fight till he goes to a threshold where the dharma of the divine is to respond to the prayer of the earth. See, that's the beauty. So Sugriv at one point literally looks at him. What are you doing? That's the time Rama kills Vali. You put all your effort. So it's not like he goes and tells him, Bhima, you know, thighs, huh? focus there, because he doesn't say that, because he has to fulfill even there the dharma. So he fights and fights and fights. He is also unbeatable. But he sees nothing is happening to Duryodhana, and Bhima is getting more and more, you know, fight is prolonging. Over hours, they say 6 to 8 hours it prolonged. Then at some point,
he indicated.
No, not, there is a prayer which has to go. Draupadi comes and she looks at Krishna, what are you doing? What? So now the divine responds. And when the divine responds, no rules apply, because divine acts in perfect freedom. That's how the divine tilts everything table. So he doesn't intervene. He intervenes only when Bhim will not ask him. Bhim is too proud. He will go down fighting. He will not ask. Arjun looks at him but doesn't ask. Draupadi has heard about it. 6 hours, 8 hours, what is going to happen? She comes and says, Keshav, I need help. He says, oh, that was what I was waiting for. So when there is an Arth Bhav, you pray, rules change. Rules are important, but divine acts in perfect freedom. He is not bound even by the rules that he has made. He is above the law. Okay, so...
So he indicated where Duryodhana should hit.
Yeah, hit. That's on the thigh.
Under the belt.
Yeah. And there again we know that, you know, when he comes, Balaram, and he says, all this while you were away, now you are coming to teach Dharma. And he say, tells him all about so many wrongs. He says, you are thinking of right and wrong has not to be seen in a... once Shurvinda was asked the similar question, with that I'll end. Surendra Johar's story. He says that as a freedom fighter, and you know, like if somebody calls you, you have called in the court to bear witness with the Gita, what should you do? Whether you should speak the truth or not? This was a question. Shurbindu's answer. Truth has to be seen in its totality and not in bits and parts. And that's a lesson for all of us for life. Because if you see bits and parts, this event, that circumstance, there is a whole background.
I was watching this serial in Patiala. I was staying with Mr. Kerr in his house.
I know.
His son had just got married, and there was this newlywed, Badhu was there. So on a Sunday, we were watching this serial. And this lady, the newlywed, she said, look at him. He's supposed to be God. He's lying. He's lying all the time. What is he, after all, what example is he?
Though it is true that Krishna actually never lied, but he used trick and diplomacy, which is part of warcraft in all wars. They have also used. Now they have blamed Krishna because all strategy, killing Abhimanyu. War is about, you know, statecraft, warcraft, they are known things. Like you dishearten or you fool the enemy. Everybody uses. Shivaji has used. Every warrior, the Kauravas have used. Everybody uses. Ghatotkach for that matter. So that's part of the dharma of war. Dharma is, war is not about when you come and you are all armed. And dharma, there is Kshatriya dharma, where if you are on the ground unarmed and you surrender, then I am not supposed to kill you. Karna had the choice. He doesn't. He tries to invoke the Brahmastra, but he forgets. Okay, so thank you.